Support for this podcast comes from Smartwater. Want to get a little more from every sip? Smartwater Alkaline doesn't just taste crisp and pure. It's loaded with everything you need to perform at your best, whether you're running marathons or boardroom meetings. Elevate how you hydrate and pick up a Smartwater Alkaline today. To learn more, visit drinksmartwater.com.
Welcome back, folks, here on Big Blue View. We are breaking down yet another position group, wide receivers today. I am Joe DeLeon, joined by Nick Mulato and Chris Flum. As I said, the receiver group, we are taking a look at how they did this past season and then discussing the possible scenarios for the upcoming offseason. Before we get into it, folks, make sure you hit that subscribe button if you enjoy listening to the show. Leave us a five-star review and also head to bigblueview.com. for more amazing New York Giants content. So this season for the receivers, guys, was an interesting one because there were spurts where we saw some big plays. We were hoping for a really good second season from Darius Slayton. And as a whole, it didn't exactly live up to what I think we were hoping. Maybe it met some expectations, but the big thing for me, guys, that stood out so much and was a big negative that we've mentioned a lot is that the current receiving group had a lot of trouble creating separation. You could point at scheme, you could point at some of the deficiencies in the receiver group, but overall, the one fact that we have is that they were one of the worst teams in the NFL per the stat that you have, Chris, at creating separation. And that was pretty apparent when you flipped on the film, and that also led to some issues in the passing game. And frankly, I think it's pretty easy to say that has to be the priority this offseason, is resolving those issues with separation. Because if receivers can't get open, you're not going to win a lot of football games because you can't throw the ball.
Yeah, no. Like you just said, if receivers can't get open, you are inviting defenses to be able to make plays on the ball. And part of it is scheme. Jason Garrett does use a lot of isolation routes. He uses a lot of concepts that basically trust the receiver to get open on his own. And when you've got Amari Cooper, Dez Bryant, T.O., guys that Jason Garrett is used to scheming for and being able to use in his schemes, elite players like that, they have that ability. But even though the Giants don't have really bad receivers, they don't have guys who are natural separators. And that really did cause a lot of problems.
Yeah, Chris, you're right. That caused way too many problems, especially for Daniel Jones in his first year in Jason Garrett's offense. And I think we all were hoping that Darius Slayton was going to significantly build on that first season that was pretty solid. He had 8 touchdowns, 740 yards. And while he had more yards in 2020, he only had 3 touchdowns, and 2 of them were in a week 1 loss to Pittsburgh, 1 in garbage time. So that lack of breakout from Darius Slayton also really kind of held this group back. You combine that with the fact that Golden Tate was kind of a corpse out there, if we're going to be frank. It's unfortunate, but he was definitely, his age showed. There were times where he would be running, a 7-yard out or something along those lines, a 7-yard break, post, corner, whatever it be. And Daniel Jones is already releasing the football to somebody else by the time he gets in and out of his break. And this is somebody that you're rolling out there in 11 personnel. I know he had a couple nice slot verts throughout the season, but I think we can all agree, I think Chris and I definitely agree, that Sterling Shepard moving into the slot, I think, would benefit this offense. And I do not envision Golden Tate being back next season at all.
Yeah, especially considering the amount of cap that he's eating up. And one of the issues that we've not really dove in deep into, but mentioned and touched on, is right now the Giants' cap situation is not bad. It's not as bad as a team like the Eagles, but it's not ideal. They want to create space so they can inevitably spend money on other players, maybe this upcoming free agent period and in the future. And the contract that they're paying Golden Tate is just not up to the value that they're getting for what Golden Tate is putting out there on the field. He had a significant drop off. The frustration that he voiced quite literally because he wasn't getting the football was ironic at times, because at the same time that he was angry he wasn't getting the ball,
He was just straight up not getting open. I do really like that point, though, the Sterling Shepard point of moving him into the slot, I think would really full-time would benefit him and benefit the offense. And ultimately, the way that you're going to go about doing this is bringing in somebody who can play that X receiver, that primary number one. He does not have to always be every single play the target of every single pass. But what when we're saying by a number one receiver, just somebody who can divert attention away that might at times need more than just one-on-one man coverage.
Yeah, and also somebody who can play that X role. You know, Nick talked about moving Sterling Shepard back into the slot. You know, Golden Tate was a slot receiver, pretty much a slot-only receiver. He can't really function out wide. And I had thought maybe Sterling Shepard could move into a at least part-time outside receiver. You know, we have seen shorter, smaller receivers be able to succeed on the outside, but that's just not Sterling Shepard's game. That never developed, and you know, I'll take the L on that one. So the Giants need to find that X receiver, the guy who can line up on the line of scrimmage. You know, he doesn't have to be a giant. You know, he doesn't have to be Plexico Burress out there. They could get a guy like Hakeem Nicks or Odell Beckham, who is, you know, somewhere around 6 foot, 6'1", you know, 198, 205. And that's still plenty big enough to win against most corners and put up a solid 1,000, 1,200 yard season. And then that would allow Shepard to move back to the slot. It would allow Darius Slayton to be that number three explosive downfield weapon and really be able to get those matchups against one-on-one coverage and maybe a number two or number three corner.
Yeah, that would be excellent. I just think the two-way go you have in the slot and Sterling Shepard's ability to win at the line of scrimmage with his release, combine that with his route running ability and how he kind of sinks his hips in and out of breaks and how he even uses the subtleties of the position, shoulder fakes, head fakes, the flipper at the top of a break to just create that extra separation would really help Daniel Jones and this offense in those third and short situations where Daniel Jones can look for Sterling Shepard and then come off of him if he is covered and find somebody else in the flat or something like that, just to assist this offense in those key third down situations. Putting Sterling Shepard in the slot, I really think will help Jason Garrett and the offense if that is what's going to happen, which you would envision is the path for 2021.
Yeah, and you talk about Sterling Shepard separating. He was the Giants' best separator. He was the only one they had who could consistently generate any kind of separation with his route running. Yeah, even then, it was still only about 3 yards of separation, which is not a lot. It's really middle of the road league-wide, but that's a hell of a lot more than Golden Tate and Darius Slayton were generating, which was just above 2 yards, which is right at the bottom of the league. I think Golden Tate was tied for fourth least separation, and you know, Darius Slayton was, I think, tied for fifth or sixth least. So 3 yards on average isn't a ton. You know, he's not wide open all the time, but considering the area of the field he runs, how quickly he gets open, that's plenty. And that is a good thing for the Giants to be able to try to maximize going forwards.
I think Sterling Shepard's route running ability is also undersold. And I don't know if like Giant fans or just people who follow the game understand how nuanced Sterling Shepard is with his routes. He's a very fun watch, Chris. I'm sure you would concur.
Oh, absolutely. I have been a fan of his route running since Oklahoma. He is one of those guys. He can win against pretty much every type of coverage, and he really does it with his route running, with those nuances, the little fakes, the way he can change up his tempo, almost use the defender's expectations against them. Yeah, he's not the fastest. He's not Tyreek Hill quick. He's got some good ups, but he's not stupidly explosive. But he is just such a technician when it comes to running his routes that it really is fun to watch.
And for that big reason, the stuff that you guys highlighted here with Sterling Shepard, I think that an indirect priority here is allowing him to play what is going to be his best role, which is coming out of the slot, the way that he's built, that route running, all the things that we've mentioned here, and ultimately the way that they're going to do that, which we're going to spend the second half of the show talking about, is addressing adding another player into the mix. The current group that they have now is not going to produce better results in 2021 if they do not add somebody else in there to, again, divert attention, just change things up, add a different skill set to the group. We're going to spend the remaining part of the show, as I said, talking about that. Before we do so, we're just going to take a really short commercial break. There are multiple directions here for the Giants over the offseason in order to address this receiver group of the current roster. And the ones that we're going to touch on are the possibility of trading for a big name player, the action of signing a big name free agent, or drafting a receiver within the first three rounds. The first one let's address here, and this one I think is a little bit more cut and dry. Taking the action of trading for and going and getting a receiver from another team that maybe is disgruntled, or just seeking an opportunity to get away, or a team just doesn't want to pay them and they need to get them off their roster. An example of this is what the Bills did last year, going and getting Stephon Diggs, adding him into the mix, and he was a big reason why Josh Allen did so well. But it's not that simple to say that the Giants can do this and create immediate success. And the one thing I believe we all agree on here is it's probably not best for the Giants specifically to do something like this and go make a big trade to go out and get a similar type player like a Stephon Diggs.
Yeah, the trade market does have some opportunities for teams to take advantage. Like you say, Stephon Diggs, we've seen the Seahawks and Patriots and Eagles take advantage of the trade market, especially with older players, guys who don't have a whole lot of time left, maybe at the tail end of a contract, and the team they have wants to get something for them before they leave. But the Giants really aren't in a great position to do that, just because they are in a really tight spot when it comes to trade pieces. You know, they don't have draft picks to trade. They only have 6 draft picks, and they need each and every one of them. They don't have a whole lot in terms of assets on their roster that they can move. So the only name that I could kind of think of as a potential trade target that might be somewhat within the realm of possibility, but nothing to get excited about or pound the table for, would be N'Keal Harry over in New England. He might be available simply because he's kind of been a draft bust for them, but there is that connection there. We know Dave Gettleman, the Giants, they're all about connections and familiarity. Joe Judge worked with N'Keal Harry as a rookie. You know, there is that New England connection. He does have the size the Giants lack, and he was a first-round pick, so you could get him under control for another 3 years. But, you know, that's not exactly a super exciting trade prospect.
Hey, he'd fit right in, though, because he can't create any separation either.
There is that, too. we got a brand to maintain here.
Right.
No, I understand the logic, though, just from the sense of that he has worked with Joe Judge. And if that trade were to ever happen, which I don't think any of us expect it to, if that trade were to happen, it would be for a very late pick. It wouldn't be anything even close to where this dude was drafted, because he's been a pretty huge bust there over the last two seasons.
Yeah, and ultimately, though, as you can see, it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense for them to go and make a trade. We're not even entirely sure. We can't even speculate who is possibly available in addition to that. But what we can talk about are the upcoming free agents. And this receiver group is actually an interesting one. There's a lot of really fun names in here that can step in and be immediate impact players. Just to rattle through a few of them: Juju Smith-Schuster from the Steelers, Chris Godwin from the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Kenny Galladay from the Detroit Lions, Will Fuller from the Houston Texans, and then also T.Y. Hilton. For me, the few that stick out the most are Kenny Galladay, because it just feels like he's going to end up leaving Detroit with the new direction that they are headed in. And then I feel like it's pretty clear to see that Will Fuller is probably not going to be coming back to that Houston team. And he's somebody who is good at creating separation, because he is so freaking fast. So adding in somebody like that into the mix might be a huge boost to this receiving group.
I would agree with that. I mean, obviously the whole steroid issue, he ended up getting suspended towards the end of the season. You would imagine that's going to be
that's going to be over with once he comes over to his new team. He won't be using anymore, but his injury history is pretty extensive. And Kenny Galladay's injury history is also pretty extensive as well, but he's a dynamic downfield threat, big body, win contested catches. But I think my favorite receiver in the free agency group would actually be Allen Robinson. It doesn't seem like he's going to end up going back to Chicago because they had an entire year to work out a contract and they did not. And I think feel like he's bitter because of that. I don't know if he's going to want to go to the Giants to play with Daniel Jones. And I'm not knocking Daniel Jones, but it just seems like Allen Robinson really probably wants to go to a quarterback that is much more established and not as young as Daniel Jones, because Allen Robinson has played with Blake Bortles. He's played with Mitchell Trubisky. I think he played with Christian Hackenberg back in college. So he probably wants to go with a really established and really already proven type of quarterback, but he would probably be my number one option out of all these guys.
Yeah, I can't help but be drawn with, you know, especially after this weekend, Chris Godwin. In addition to being a really fun, good receiver, he's also a pretty darn good blocker. I think an underrated blocker. And also Juju Smith-Schuster is just fun. Yeah, maybe New York fans, Dave Gettleman in particular, wouldn't be too keen on bringing in a wide receiver who likes to dance. But Juju is just fun. We talked about this during the season way back in week one. He is one of the best Twitter follows around. I was a fan of his back in college. He is a guy, he just wins. He can go up and get the ball. He can win contested catch situations. He has great size and he is a better athlete than he tested. Then there's some other ideas, you know, Curtis Samuel, again, the connections are there. Potentially former Carolina Panther. He was drafted by Gettleman. Corey Davis, he was a very highly drafted wide receiver. He hasn't really lived up to his draft pedigree. You know, again, there's a whole lot of, I think, bust potential there with a signing. I'm not sure if you really want to give him a big contract, so that could actually appeal to the Giants as a potential high risk, high reward move. But this is definitely an interesting wide receiver class.
Absolutely. And that's another thing I wanted to bring up is the contracts of all these guys, because a lot of these guys' contracts are going to obviously be a bit more severe. So I'm wondering if a guy like Corey Davis, if he would be had on the cheap for a lesser deal, like a 2-year deal, or where. I don't exactly know how to gauge some of these contracts for some of these players. And then when you look at T.Y. Hilton and Marvin Jones, those are two older players. What are they going to go for on the market? What do you guys think?
I personally wouldn't be surprised if we see a lot of 1-year prove it deals this year, just because the salary cap is shrinking. So teams are probably going to be hesitant. Most teams anyway, the Jets and the Jaguars are going to be whales out there, but I think most teams are going to be hesitant to hand out big contracts simply because they might not have the money to spend. The Giants are probably going to have to make some roster cuts. You know, we talked about Golden Tate, but there's also Nate Solder, Levine Toilolo, maybe even some tougher cuts like Kevin Zeitler, just to be able to sign their rookie class, let alone go out free agent shopping.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think that there's going to be a good assortment of names that will be surprised that either stick around for a long period of time because they are waiting for a big contract to fall in their lap. Maybe you have some players come back to some team-friendly deals, but there are ultimately, like you mentioned here, Chris, there are going to be teams at the top, and I think the few that have the most cap space are in need of receivers, if we're talking specifically about receivers. So maybe the top five in this group ends up making really good money, but I very well could see the remaining guys, maybe after Will Fuller, when you get slower down, further down this list, those guys end up on 1 to 2 year prove it deals because they just realistically teams cannot afford to keep any of these players. But overall, I think when you talk about this group, the easiest thing that you can take away without even mentioning any of the names is that really there's very few guys that I would be disappointed with. And I think the Giants, you could go and get any of these players named and they would be a huge boost to the group and would help out the Giants receiving core and would be impactful for a few years for however long they sign them to be a part of this Giants team. The final directional piece here, and you could argue that they could still do both of these things in terms of free agency and drafting, but if they don't sign anybody in free agency, there's nobody that they like or they can't agree to a good contract that works for them, the other option then becomes drafting somebody early and then developing them and hoping that they have an immediate impact within their first few years, because that is the window you're trying to hit with Daniel Jones's rookie contract. And the names that we've thrown out there a ton, Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, Jamar Chase if he slides a little bit. And then when you get into that final end of the first round, early second, because there's so many guys could end up sliding a little bit. Rondale Moore, Rashad Bateman, Kadarius Toney. There is a really fun group of receivers here, and maybe not all of them step in and have a Justin Jefferson type impact. You can still get guys coming in and contributing and helping out this team improve in the second year of Jason Garrett's control of this offense.
I think it's interesting, too, because Dave Gettleman made a point in that post-season presser to mention wide receiver. And I feel like Dave Gettleman is probably terrible at poker. He shows his hand. He shows his face. Everyone knew he loved Saquon Barkley. There were leaks that he loved Daniel Jones. And him putting such a precedent in that interview talking about the wide receiver position to me suggests that they're probably going to go wide receiver at 11 if they don't sign someone like Kenny Golladay or Allen Robinson or Chris Godwin. So at that 11 pick, if they do not trade back, which is not of the Dave Gettleman MO, we may see the Giants go with a playmaking type of wide receiver, or maybe Kyle Pitts, who is a tight end who can be a wide receiver. So I think it's going to be really, really interesting. Now it's going to come down to who will be available, how many of these guys will be available, and what will happen if Devonta Smith, Jalen Waddle, and Jamar Chase are all gone. Would they go with Kyle Pitts?
Well, I have to say, for me, Kyle Pitts is a wide receiver, period. I think if he is drafted as a tight end, that is a wasted pick. Any play where he is in line blocking, you're doing offense wrong. Yeah, maybe out wide blocking on a running play or a screen play, fine. But he should not be back in pass protection. That is just a bad use of assets. But for me, the guy I'm actually really curious about is Jamar Chase. You know, he came in, he was unquestionably wide receiver one in this class. You know, after last year at LSU with Joe Burrow putting up just stupid numbers, yeah, it wasn't really a question that he would probably be a top five pick. But then, you know, he opts out of this year, out of sight, out of mind. He only has 1 year of production coming into the NFL. Meanwhile, Devonta Smith, he has a year where he is just ridiculously productive, wins the Heisman Trophy. He puts up stupid numbers. I think there's a legitimate chance that Smith is the first wide receiver off the board, especially after the Senior Bowl this week. You know, that is set up almost perfectly for him to just take the game over, to take over practices.
Well, he's not going to be practicing, though, because of the broken hand, but he will be going through all of the everything else.
So if I think, especially I think for him, the important part will be the measurements. And if he measures in at not whip thin, you know, if he comes in at, you know, above 180 pounds, that'll answer a lot of questions about him.
He's gonna come in like Levi Wallace, man. Levi Wallace, the Senior Bowl, was like 170 pounds at cornerback, and everybody who was in the room was just like, "Oh my gosh, this dude needs to eat."
So the rumor has it that I apparently have heard is that Devonta Smith is like 164. So those dreams of him being 180, Chris, probably not going to happen.
Okay. Now, guys, I want to circle back to Kyle Pitts for a second. Mm-hmm. We know that Jason Garrett loves using 12, 13 personnel. Sometimes he'll line up in a condensed formation and then spread them out and have Evan Engram in the slot, and then sometimes even Caden Smith. I'm wondering if the allure of Kyle Pitts in that kind of situation where, yes, you don't want him. He's not an ideal blocker, but he can do it. He's going to try hard, similar to Evan Engram. I would say he's probably a little bit better, but obviously Evan Engram is a much more experienced player at this point. But I'm imagining Kyle Pitts in that offense where you can come out in that personnel, defense subs their guys in, and then you could spread Evan Engram and Kyle Pitts out and get them into space. That'd be a unique thing for Jason Garrett. It would be interesting to see.
Yeah, that is exactly what I'm envisioning. Or even just convert him into Plaxico Burress. That's a comparison I've made before. You know, just as a ginormous receiver, a guy that defenses just are not equipped to deal with. But with that experience at tight end, you could use him as that matchup nightmare, as a guy you can move around the offensive formation. You could possibly get him singled up on a linebacker and, you know, there just are not many linebackers equipped to deal with him. The physical traits are just so rare. And I think if an offense and a coach has the vision to be able to craft an offense with him in mind and his unique traits, yet he is going to be incredibly difficult to stop. Yeah, he is going to give defensive coordinators fits if he is used correctly.
Yeah, and that's what makes things exciting with talking about Kyle Pitts and him. It's just an odd thing to really predict, because there are definitely people out there that agree with you, Chris, that he might be a receiver, but ultimately, if he does remain a tight end, the Giants have not been afraid to use multiple tight ends. So instead of saying, all right, we're going to go get a receiver, we're just going to draft the best available offensive weapon that is also capable of catching passes. They would be more than happy to deploy a group that is Evan Ingram, Kyle Pitts, and Caden Smith. Again, considering how much they've run two tight ends, and then on top of that, how much we've seen them run three tight ends in some of the formations. So it's just an added wrinkle to the offense that maybe all three of those guys are gone and off the board that we talked about: Jamar Chase, Jalen Waddle, Devonta Smith. You're frustrated, and then you just decide to pull the trigger if you're Dave Gettleman and say, screw it, we're just going to take the best offensive player and we're going to kick the crap out of opposing secondaries because we've got too many big, fast guys for everybody to keep up with.
That could look a lot like the Baltimore offense, except, you know, without Lamar Jackson doing Lamar Jackson things. But with those multiple tight end groups, and, you know, similar in some ways to maybe Kansas City with Kelce out there being just too big, too fast, and able to do too many things out of alignments defenses just are not used to contending with.
I think it would be really, really interesting, guys. Someone just prognosticating right now, what if it's Jalen Waddle and Kyle Pitts who are available at 11? What direction would they go? You think they would just go with Waddle, that explosive type of player? Because you brought up, and just a parallel to the Kansas City Chiefs, you see comparisons, Jalen Waddle to Tyreek Hill. I don't think that's entirely accurate, but similar explosive, smaller type of receivers. Kyle Pitts to Travis Kelce, obviously not entirely accurate, but just similar in very adept pass-catching tight ends. You think they would just go with the wide receiver in that situation?
I would argue that it would probably be the receiver. If a receiver's on the board that they like, they're probably going to go in that direction, which it probably would be Jalen Waddle. I feel like if they go Kyle Pitts, it would be a last resort. They're frustrated that they missed out on some of the other big name offensive players, and they just chose to at least get someone talented in the first round rather than not addressing it until later on in the draft. I think that Waddle would probably be the pick, especially because overall, I think adding speed is never a problem. You know, adding someone who's compact and fast and good at creating space, like we're talking about, Waddle would be fully capable of doing that.
Yeah, I agree. I think just being old school, traditional, that is the Giants' DNA. And given the choice between picking a new school hybrid player or a guy you kind of sort of have to project, because Kyle Pitts did play more than a little bit of receiver in Florida's offense, but versus a full-time wide receiver, a guy you can turn on the tape and he's at receiver every single time. Yeah, he might be doing a lot of blocking himself there. He was kind of buried on that Alabama roster, but, you know, rightfully so with all of the first round top 10 talents they had there. But yeah, I think it's just an easier pick for the Giants to make to go with Waddle. To me, the interesting thing that could happen is, what if all four of them go? That's happened in a few mock drafts I've run. I don't think it's particularly likely, but what if somehow, some way, all four of those guys go in the top 10? You know, where do the Giants turn then? You know, obviously, they probably go for a defensive player in the first round. What about in the second or third rounds?
Second and third rounds, there was going to be some really interesting wide receivers. But in that first round, you would imagine they would load up on defense, because if those four are gone, there are going to be some really good prospects that are going to be around at 11 if they do not trade back. But there are some later round guys. I mean, Terrence Marshall may be there in the second round. Kadarius Toney, who's a smaller type of electrifying receiver who is very, very exciting. A lot of people say he's a human joystick, which I feel like there's like five human joysticks in every single draft. It's a slap in the face to Dante Hall, but it's whatever. In the later rounds, though, I like a guy like Amir Smith-Marset, who is another one of those really, really agile type of receivers, playmaking type of receivers, and then a bigger body dude who could fill that X receiver role, who could be available round three, maybe even in day three, because the depth in this draft is a lot of wide receivers, similar to last year's draft, a lot of very good, skilled wide receivers. Someone like Seth Williams from Auburn.
And as you can tell, there's a pretty creative... There's multiple creative directions that the Giants could go in this upcoming draft class, and that is something that we'll continue to evaluate throughout this draft process. We will have a receiver show coming out discussing some of the best names to be aware about in the 2021 NFL draft. Folks, thank you for tuning in. That is all we have on this wide receiver evaluation show. Be sure to follow us on social media at Big Blue View. Head to bigblueview.com and also hit that subscribe button and leave us a review. Stay tuned for later in the week as Chris and I highlight the safety group in the 2021 draft.